principally a TV receiver based on something they called a light cell, which was, well, actually just a slide projector. And what they did was they made stenciled slides of just ID slides. And they projected these from inside onto a screen for people to watch. And these, you know, people took notes. They wrote for QSLs.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess
that's a verification card for those who don't know what a QSL card is.
And some of these people, it was interesting that the Russian stations didn't have the Cyrillic alphabet. They had the Roman call letters. People didn't catch on, but you might have thought that they'd have caught on when they wrote to KLEE in Houston,
mm-hmm.
L2, and were told, well, yes, we're KPRC now. Instead, people thought, wow, this thing picks up stuff that's been 2 years gone.
So it was a real hoax.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Very good, Robert. Thanks for the call.
You are tuned to Israel Broadcasting from Jerusalem. Shalom Aleichem. Good evening.
Kol Israel, or the Voice of Israel, comes in very well into North America, doesn't it?
On their West Coast time periods, very well.
And if I remember the schedule, it's at 0500 hours?
Or 15 minutes.
15 right. minutes. I mean, if you don't get there, you don't bother. I mean, it's there for 15 minutes in English, and that's it. The rest is in French, I believe.
That's beamed to Canada.
Yeah. So you've got a 15-minute shot at it. And you heard that little signature or the interval signal, and they had it on about 5 minutes before they begin the broadcast.
Right.
And they're on for 15 minutes. 0500 hours. On the West Coast, that would be 9 p.m., right?
Right.
9 p.m., and the frequencies would be 9440, 9425, and 9009. And you were telling me they have a new frequency in the 41-meter band.
For the fall season, they've introduced 7.412.
7.412.
Right.
All right, very good. Let's take another call. Hello, Larry. You're on Talk Radio. Good morning.
Hello, Ray. I'd like to congratulate you on a really fine show.
Thank you.
And I'd like to tell Dr. Wood, he's the one that originally got me started in, hooked on DXing with his book, Shortwave Voices of the World.
All right. Dr. Wood, Larry is in Pittsburgh there, and he's giving you a compliment.
Thank you. I can barely hear him, but you're passing it on. Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to ask a question directed either to you or Stuart. What direction do you think international shortwave broadcasting is taking with the advent of all the new technologies such as direct satellite feeds and what have you?
All right, we'll let Dr. Wood answer that, and then we'll let Stuart do it.
I believe the question was about the future of shortwave broadcasting.
Yeah, along with satellite transmissions. I guess he also is talking about relay stations and direct frequency readout, things like that.
Well, the satellite transmissions, the Voice of America has been given considerable funding for research into the use of satellites in the higher frequency bands, especially the 11-meter band, which is barely usable at present for contacting one point on Earth to another point, but from the space, the satellite could be used for that, and this would get into the Soviet Union, it would get into Eastern Europe and Afghanistan and avoid the jamming, which simply couldn't be operational against it.
Well, what about the propagation characteristics from space, from, a vehicle that's outside the ionosphere?
It seems to be able to transmit with comparatively low power up there into the Earth on the 11-meter band and just at the very high end of shortwave, and some of us don't yet have receivers that are really sensitive or properly equipped to tune up that high, but most of the new digital frequency readout stations.
So that might be the next battleground for the battle for men's minds, hearts and minds, right?
That's right.
That if we put a satellite up there doing that, the Russians, you know, are going to do the same thing, so we might have a new... meter band to listen to watch the giants fight it out for the control of our minds.
Ray, I might say that years ago when the Chinese put up their first satellite, the very first signal that they broadcast from the first Chinese satellite was the identification signal of Radio Beijing, which you've already played this evening.
That's right. I remember that very well. I played it on the air.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it's happened already, really.
Okay. Now, Larry, let's get an answer from Stuart McKenzie here.
Well, as the bands will be expanding in the next year or so, due to the many stations that are on the air, because the countries, a lot of them are nationalistic now, and they want to give a picture of the world of what they are. So you'll see a lot of ideological going back and forth between the United States and the Soviet Union, each giving their views on the way of life.
Okay, how's that, Larry?
Very fine.
Thanks for the call.
All right, thanks, Rick.
All right. And let's say hello to George. Hello, George. You're on Talk Radio with Stuart McKenzie and Dr. Richard E. Wood.
Yes, I'd just like to comment. I had the chance to do something this summer that not too many shortwave listeners get to do, and that's visit a shortwave radio station in South Africa, Radio RSA.
And they put in a tremendous signal with their 500,000-watt transmitters into North America, as you know.
Oh, yes, they do. In fact, I got to meet Colin Houston and actually talk over the air and everything to North America. I think it was July 6th. I'm not sure of the date. I was there then. I didn't think that much attention, but it was over their PO Box 455559 show. And I'd like to say it was really a nice experience. And 4 years ago, I would have never thought that I'd even leave my own country, let alone the San Fernando Valley, to do something like that. And that's all as a result of friendships through shortwave radio. And anyone who's listening, I'd like to tell them it's an extremely good way to become well-informed about what's going on in the rest of the world.
That's true, and, you know, most of these large international broadcasters also have DX programs.
Right, Radio RSA is one, Call Israel is another one,
uh-huh.
Radio Netherlands, Media Network, Radio Canada International, Radio Korea, and I'd like to say that Radio Israel comes in at 0230, midnight UTC, 0100 and 0200, besides the 15-minute broadcast. The other broadcasts are half an hour.
Now, you probably heard me talk on the telephone to Vladimir Posner. Have you ever heard Posner with his commentary on Radio Moscow?
Yes, I have, Ray. In fact, I'd like to comment on that if I have a couple of minutes.
Sure.
I've written Vladimir Posner a couple of times, and as what I did, I sent him an article that was a reprint out of the Los Angeles Times that more or less stated that we've been planning a first strike nuclear attack on the USSR since 1946.
Mm-hmm.
And as what I stated in that was that living in America, I was free to send that to him, and he could comment over the air and mention my name, and nothing would happen to me. And what I asked him was, would somebody in the USSR be free to do the same thing with the Voice of America? Yeah. Now let me tell you what they did. They deleted that whole first part of my question.
Of course, that's called propaganda.
Right, and I was dumbfounded by that because it made it seem like I was sending in something that was critical of my own country. In fact, I have a reprint of it. I wrote him and asked him to send me a printed copy of that, and I have it.
Yeah. George, thank you very much.
Okay, Ray, can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of years ago, I wrote you, and you sent me one of your QSL cards. It was in regards to you going on the satellite and everything.
Oh, yeah. Well, how about that? Very good.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
All right, George.
Bye.
And since he mentioned the DX programs and Radio Netherlands, used to be called Radio Nederland, they interviewed me on the phone here a couple of days ago, and it was on the broadcast. When did this come through? Last night? Night before last?
Mm-hmm.
All right, take a listen to it.
You found us. This is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service, where today's feature program is Media Network, our communications magazine, with me, Jonathan Marks. In the early hours this coming Saturday morning, the subject of discussion will be shortwave radio in the United States. That is, if you're in listening reach of the ABC Talk Radio Network. Ray Bream is the host of the phone-in program, which originates from ABC in Los Angeles, but airs on some 36 stations around the country. Starting at 0806 UTC, just after 3 a.m. on America's East Coast, you'll be talking about shortwave listening together with a panel of guests in the studio and on the phone. So we asked Ray, why shortwave?
I have been a shortwave enthusiast since 1948. I often use excerpts on my show, whether it's from Radio Moscow or the Voice of the Sandinista Revolution in Nicaragua, or whatever is happening, I would use a little excerpt on my show. That sparks a lot of interest. And so, therefore, we're just going to do a show on shortwave listening with the idea that if you listen to the world, you'll be a better informed person, unquote. It'll be a three-hour show. This will be not the DXing as much as the listening for content. Certainly, the DX part will come into it. Don't get me wrong. But today, it's not just to say that you've heard some far-off station somewhere, but what have you heard? What is it that you've heard? If you listen to these shortwave stations, you'll hear news that you won't hear domestically.
All right, that was recorded a couple of nights ago, Stuart. You did that off of Radio Netherlands.
Right.
Thank you very much. I was out of the house. I didn't hear it.
Yeah, this is from the Bonaire.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, their relay station there in the Netherlands Antilles. My guest in the studio, Stuart McKenzie, the founder and general manager of the American Shortwave Listeners Club, and on the phone from Hawaii, Dr. Richard E. Wood. Hello, Mike. You're on Talk Radio with Stuart McKenzie and Dr. Richard E. Wood.
Morning, Ray. How are you?
Good morning.
Well, I started out, you know, in the shortwave not too long ago, but so far I have 4 verification cards, from one from West and East Germany and Australia and South Korea. And I really, really enjoy listening to shortwave all the time. I picked up a new Uniden CR2021 model, digital readout, and it's really, it's fascinating to listen to, excuse the French, baloney from Russia. Like my friend told me, he says, what are you listening to? Radio Moscow, I get my daily baloney. And then I can always tune to Radio Australia all the time. And they got the best signals out of everything.
Yeah, well, they've got good propagation, of course, by being where they are. They don't have to go around any auroral zone.
Oh, yeah, but Radio Russia, though, it sounds like, I don't know, Moscow sometimes has that woodpecker noise in there with them. And I can always tell when that woodpecker comes on, or a certain person comes on there.
Mm-hmm.
And
what do you think your favorite international station is?
Well, it has to be the BBC radio.
Yeah, if you want news, you've got to tune in the BBC. They've got so many great programs. Voices in the News, they have, or Radio Newsreel, I guess it's called. They have The World Today, which I was listening to about Cyprus, I think it was yesterday. And they have, of course, Letter from America with Alistair Cook.
Right.
I hear that on Saturday evenings. And, you know, it's just a great broadcast service. If you want to know what's happening in the world, they've got the greatest news service anywhere.
Nous allons maintenant diffuser pendant une heure, de 17h à 18h GMT, l'émission quotidienne de Radio France Internationale en langue anglaise. This is Radio France International.
I kind of like their national anthem. But they have a new shortwave relay transmitter now in French Guiana in South America, and it puts in one heck of a signal in North America, even though they're transmitting, beaming their signal to Africa.
It comes in almost like a local radio.
Oh, that's great. And, you know, it's 500,000 watts. And you were saying that Radio Yugoslavia is going on here very shortly, the beginning of the year?
In January.
In January.
Testing, right.
Testing with their new 500,000 watt transmitters. That's the way it's going, I guess. We're really in the superpower race, and a lot of people figure that the little countries aren't going to have a chance because they're going to be literally overpowered by the biggies.
Well, the smaller ones now are starting to build these large transmitters, too, like over in Uganda.
You were saying that even little Bangladesh is going on with 500,000 watts.
Right. They have several of them that they're on the air now.
They can't feed their people, but they've got 500,000 watt shortwave stations.
Right.
Something, you know, that's very interesting. Whenever a socialist or communist type of government takes over, the first thing they do is convert to the shortwave bands.
Yeah, this is to put their image across to the rest of the world.
So many countries only had, you know, domestic, local type medium wave stations. But the first thing they do is put those powerful international shortwave stations on the air.
That's the way, you know, the governments of this type, they want to put their image across. So this is the direction that they go in now.
And Dr. Wood, you must have some thoughts on that. How do you feel about the superpower race?
Happy about it, as it does tend to crowd the bands. But there is one thing you might say. Some of the smaller countries are piggybacking in on the bigger ones. And for an example, Radio Japan is building a relay station in Panama, or at least they're negotiating to build it, and they have a clause in there that the Panamanians will have access to that transmitter, and they'll produce international programming from Panama, a country which simply has not been active on the shortwave broadcast bands at all in recent years.
So, and Japan has an agreement, too, in Western Europe, do they not?
That's right. Japan has a relay in Portugal, and they have a very powerful and quite well-heard relay in Gabon, the oil-rich country of West Africa. So Japan is beginning to develop a worldwide relay network, sometimes not wholly owned by the Japanese, but buying time on commercial shortwave stations, which are available to more or less all comers.
On the 49-meter band, I've also heard, quite obviously, a relay of Taiwan. They must be buying time from some station in the Caribbean. What station is that?
Not a buying arrangement. It's a swap. It's a trade-off. You see, the religious broadcaster Trans World Radio, TWR, which is headquartered in Chatham, New Jersey, they have a number of transmitters around the world which they own. But in addition to that, they wanted to get their signal into India, and so they had a relay arrangement with the Voice of Free China from Taiwan, carry the programs of this American Christian relay station over there to listeners in India and also in Chinese to the mainland of China. And on the other hand, they carry them over WYFR in Okeechobee, Florida.
Ah, so that's
it. Trade-off.
So it's a trade-off, a swap.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. All right, let's...
There's a booklet on that.
You did?
I just got a booklet on that showing the people from WYFR who went over to the Voice of Free China, visited that studio, inspected the transmitters, and they signed an agreement there on the spot to do the relay. Then they put the relay on the air, and they went into the People's Republic of China, and they took their portable radios. These were American Christian missionaries who actually went into the People's Republic of China, took their radios in there, and listened to find out for themselves whether that broadcast was coming in from Taiwan, and they satisfied themselves.
Very interesting. All right, Dr. Wood, we're going to now take another phone call. This time, we're going to Montreal, Canada, and say hello to Mr. Ian McFarland, who does a DX program on Radio Canada International. Ian, good morning.
Good morning, Ray. How are you?
Fine. How are things in Montreal?
A little snowy. We had a little snow overnight, I'm unhappy to say.
Yeah, but it's nice this time of year. You've got to have a little snow for the Christmas season.
Oh, yes. It's going to get everybody into a Christmas mood, I think, and get them into the stores.
That's the way it should be.
Yes, indeed.
If it ever snowed in Hawaii, it would be disaster.
It certainly would. White Christmas is very nice.
Tell us about your DX program, and how old is it?
Well, it started in 1977, actually, after a hiatus of about 2 years. The old Radio Canada Shortwave Club, which I'm sure Richard Wood will remember, along with all your listeners that have been listening to shortwave for quite a few years. That went on the air in 1962, and of course it was probably the most popular program on what was then the international service of the CBC.
What kind of mail do you get from listeners around the world?
Well, we get all sorts of mail. Of course, like most stations, I think the bulk of the mail is requests for program schedules, but we get a lot of mail from listeners who are new to shortwave and don't really know very much about it, and that's the main reason that we started that new feature that we started recently, mm-hmm. I guess about a couple of months ago, the Newcomers Corner, just to give people a little basic information that they might not be able to get elsewhere.
Radio Canada International is one of my favorite stations.
Well, we're certainly glad to hear that, Ray. I've been listening to you this morning on WABC. It's a little fuzzy right now, but it's coming in not too badly.
Well, good. Ian, what would you tell a person who has never tuned in the shortwave bands and they don't know how, they don't know a kilohertz from a meter band, what would you tell them?
Well, I think the first thing you have to tell people who haven't listened to shortwave and aren't really familiar with it is that you don't any longer need the old boat anchor type of receiver to pick it up. I think people still have something of a stereotyped image of a shortwave receiver, and that's the old transoceanic type of receiver. They were excellent receivers in their time, but they were fairly big and heavy. Now you can get a shortwave receiver that'll fit in your shirt pocket, and you hardly even know it's there. But I think one of the main things that people have to be aware of is that shortwave, since there are such vast distances involved, is not going to come into your house like a local AM station all the time. A lot of them will. You were just talking about all these new 500 kilowatt superpower transmitters. Well, a lot of these are going to put a signal into the target area, if it's one or two hops away, that will sound like a local station. But a lot of them are going to sound somewhat less powerful. So you have to accept that the music you're going to hear is not going to be like you would pick up on your FM stereo.
All right.
You get a little static and interference.
We have Ian McFarlane on the line. He runs a DX show on Radio Canada International. What time is it on, Ian?
Well, it depends on the target area, Ray. It's on in the United States, at least in the eastern part, at 10 p.m. on Sunday night. But the beauty of the United States, or most of North America, is that they can pick it up. Lately, the reception conditions have been a bit ropey for this, but they can pick it up on our European service, and that's at around 1930 UTC. It's 0300, or 0200, rather, on the North American service in terms of UTC. And then on the African service, it's on Saturdays, which gives you an alternate day to listen to it, and that's on at 2130 UTC.
Now, a lot of listeners are saying, you're talking a language I don't understand. You're talking GMT, you're talking UTC. What is that? So we better explain that.
Well, GMT is Greenwich Mean Time, of course, and that's the international standard form of time, and that's based on the Greenwich Meridian. And GMT is 5 hours ahead of Eastern Standard Time. So if you're living in New York City and it's midnight, it's 5 o'clock in the morning in terms of GMT. Now, the term UTC has been coming into increasing use in recent years, and that is due to the fact that the ITU, which is the International Telecommunications Union, based in Geneva, that's an agency of the United Nations, decreed that international shortwave would start to use UTC. That stands for Coordinated Universal Time, and the acronym doesn't reflect the actual words in that term. It's done intentionally. So GMT and UTC are exactly the same thing.
We just call it by a different name.
Yes, a rose by any other name is still a rose. And
it used to be megahertz and megacycles and kilocycles, and now it's megahertz, kilohertz, and yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's gone from cycles to hertz.
Cycles to hertz.
Yeah, hertz is the name of the man who invented the Hertzian wave.
That's right.
Which is the wave that you are listening to when you're listening to radio.
Okay, let's take a call. We have Tony. Hello, Tony. You're on Talk Radio with Ian McFarlane, Dr. Richard Wood, and Stuart McKenzie.
Good morning, Ray. I'd like to say good morning to all your guests.
Good morning.
I've been listening since you came on with this program. It's been very interesting. I've been a DXer since about 1970, and I started out where Dr. Wood is.
In Hawaii?
Yes, sir. A couple of islands over. I was on Oahu, near the town of Waiawa.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned something a few minutes ago about snow in Hawaii. Well, in a couple of months, I believe it's on Mauna Kea. They will be snow skiing in Hawaii.
Yeah, well, that's true, but I mean in the population centers.
Right. I thought it was strange that somebody told me to take my skis when I went there. But as for new DXers, people getting into the hobby, with the propagation factors the way they are, it's kind of a bad time to start. Someone may get a little bit discouraged.
Yeah, but there are a lot of people who will tune in the powerful stations and think that's a great find.
Right.
So it's never, a season that you should forego. You know, delve into it right now with both feet.
Right, and the next best thing a new listener has is a local DX club. Some of them put up some really fine bulletins, and I'd like to blow my own horn a little bit. I'm the chairman of the Central Maryland DX Association here in Baltimore, and we are always open to give lectures to clubs or groups or anyone interested in it.
Well, you know, there's a group called the Association of DX Reporters. Is that you?
No, that's run by a Mr. Reuben Daigle, who is a member of our club.
Well, that's in Baltimore, Maryland, too.
Yes, sir. Reuben has been a avid medium-wave DXer for many years, and he brings a tremendous insight to our club because we do cover not only shortwave, but the medium-wave, long-wave, and the VHF and UHF spectrums also.
Very good, Tony. I appreciate the call. Ian McFarland, anything you'd like to add to our program here this morning?
Well, I think, Ray, one of the points that I try to get across is that you don't have to necessarily look upon shortwave listening as a hobby. I think there are a lot of fine people in the hobby, but there are also millions of people out there that just listen to it as a means of keeping in touch with the world. They don't write reception reports and write away for QSL cards. So it's just another activity, like they listen to their own local radio. So
yes, I agree, and that's the way I listen to shortwave radio.
Yeah, but the clubs do play a very important part, and as the last caller just said, that's a great way to find out what's cooking on shortwave, and a lot of club bulletins give you a lot of very good information, good solid information, to get you started in shortwave listening.
What a bird.
This is New Zealand.
I wonder how many stations start off with birds. I mean, there's the Kookaburra, Radio Australia. You've got the bird that they have down in South Africa. What is that bird?
I've never
heard them talk about
no,
that.
No, the only one that I know is that they name is the one from Australia, who is Jocko.
They named it Jocko?
Jocko.
And, of course, New Zealand have the little birdies. And the Canary Islands used to have birds, if I recall.
I'm trying to think. They probably still do, since they're a separate broadcasting.
Yeah. Well, there's one thing about tuning in those stations. You always know what the weather's like. It was great hearing from Ian McFarland in Montreal, and we now know that it's snowing in Montreal. But you can flip the switch and...
And now for the weather here in Moscow. There's little snow left. It's practically all melted. The temperature is around 35 degrees Fahrenheit, and the sky is overcast.
And I know that's something that you were just dying to hear. Right, Richard Wood?
That's right, yes. We had a little snow here in Hawaii, in fact, for the first time in 5 years on the peak of Mauna Kea. That was about 3 weeks ago. It was very watery snow, and it melted within, I think, probably about 12 hours or so. Sometimes there's skiing in Hawaii, but I don't know whether we'll have any this winter.
How's the reception of Radio Moscow in Hawaii?
Perfect. Reception of most stations is very good here, and Moscow's just all over the dial.
As always.
As always. Of course, they have many transmitters located in the Soviet Far East and in Siberia, quite close to us, and they come in very loud and clear, all their services.
Some stations have been experimenting with single sideband. Do you think that's going to catch on?
A kind of compatible single sideband or reduced carrier sideband. I've heard some tests in that mode from Radio Nederland, Radio Netherlands, with their new transmitters in Flevoland, northern part of Holland, and
you're going to do a test on that, I think. You're going to do a test on that after the first of the year.
I thought I heard some tests already. In fact, I was meaning to mention that to Tom Meyer when he was on, because I have been hearing such tests already, and they seem to be compatible with ordinary existing receivers, and I don't think we're going to have to go out and scrap our present receivers. We just can't do that at this stage.
In the studio, we have none other than Stuart McKenzie of the American Shortwave Listeners Club, and on the phone, Dr. Richard E. Wood in Hawaii, the granddaddy of all DXers. And now, let's say that if you want to tune in the world, I mean, there's only one place to do it, and that is on the shortwave bands. Hello, Craig. You're on Talk Radio with Stuart McKenzie and Dr. Richard Wood.
Yeah, good morning. I run a shortwave news service, kind of, providing cuts of interesting things for local broadcasters, and I have a few excerpts of some of the major news stories that you guys have been talking about.
Really?
One in particular, the Falklands.
All right.
Well, let me feed a little of that to you.
BBC World Service presents News Desk, the world news read by John Stairs. Britain has broken off diplomatic relations with Argentina following the Argentine invasion of the British colony of the Falkland Islands in the South Atlantic. The British Defence Secretary, Mr. Nash, says a substantial naval task force is being assembled in Britain. He refused to go into details, but pointed out that ships sailing from Britain will take more than 2 weeks to reach the Falklands.
General Francioli rejected charges of Argentina guilty of aggression for what Argentines regard as repossession of their own territory. He said Argentina had acted with firmness, but without will defend the territory to its utmost. He said invasion was the only alternative after what he called Britain's perpetuation of its rule through endless delays and evasion in years of intergovernment talk.
Since the force being assembled is Britain's latest aircraft carrier, HMS Invincible, you have a small squadron of Harrier jumpers. Another carrier, HMS Hermes, will have seeking helicopters. The two will be surrounded by frigates and destroyers, together with a full fleet of support vessels. The Navy has a flotilla of about 16 frigates and destroyers at sea in the Atlantic. Presumably some of those aircraft, if not all of them, will join the task force. Also making ready to go are the Royal Marines, including perhaps their special boat section, the Marines equivalent of the SAS. Those men will go partly by sea and some by air, probably using Ascension Island as their mid-Atlantic staging post. Our information is coming principally from the radio amateur operator Bob, 50 miles outside of Port Stanley on the sheep farm. He said the Argentines seem to be trying to return things to normal as quick as possible. They said over the local radio that all restrictions would be lifted later today and normal life would resume.
Okay, Craig, that's pretty good.
Okay, which has existed since the invasion.
That's not bad at all. Craig, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, he's feeding the... that's always the problem.
To collect their children who've been stuck in school instead.
Too bad we can't get Craig back on the phone here. Because we are running out of time in this segment. Craig, can you hear me? No, he can't. Okay. That's one of the problems we have. And I'm sorry I can't say goodbye to Craig because he's playing... the report of the BBC regarding the Falkland Islands. You have a lot of that too, Stuart, don't you?
Yes, right.
In fact, you fed me some of it, I remember, and I used on the air.
Right, down in the local station when they had their battles going on, we were going.
Right. Okay, in the studio, Stuart McKenzie, the American Shortwave Listeners Club, and on the phone from Hawaii, Dr. Richard E. Wood. This is Talk Radio. I am Ray Vrain. All right, on the phone, we have Dr. Richard E. Wood in Hawaii, and in the studio, Stuart McKenzie of the American Shortwave Listeners Club. We haven't really talked about your club too much. Let's talk about it very briefly.
Oh, okay. The club, as you know, we're in our 25th anniversary year. And,
25th anniversary.
Right, and we cover all aspects of the hobby for the beginners up to the experienced DXers, and we go by continent.
And you're headquartered in Huntington Beach, California.
Right.
How do people write to you?
They just sent us a letter to 16182 Ballard Lane.
Ballard, like in song?
Like in song, Huntington Beach, and zip code is 92649.
Very good. Now, one of the things we have not talked about is the future of shortwave when it comes to commercial shortwave radio stations. Years ago, there was a commercial shortwave radio station. Well, let's go back. Let's go back to WRUL. That was a commercial radio station for all those years. I don't know how successful, but it was on the air. And then it was bought by the Mormon Church, if I recall, Bonneville Broadcasting, and they changed the call letters to WNYW, and it was on the air for several years. But it, too, was not successful. But now we have WRNO on the air from New Orleans. That's a commercial broadcast station operating out of the United States. And there's about a new one to go on the air here very shortly out of Alabama. And we have Mr. H.D. Norman on the phone, who's chairman of the World Service Broadcasting Corporation, NDXC. That sounds like N-Dixie or N-Dixie. And son of a gun, it is in Alabama, to be exact. Where are you speaking from, Mr. Howard? Or Mr. Norman?
Yes, I'm on the line to you from about 40 miles from Warm Springs, Georgia. I'm in Opelika, Alabama, in the middle of beautiful downtown Opelika.
And is that where the shortwave station is going to be headquartered?
Yes, it is. The actual transmission facilities. We do plan to have sales offices in Atlanta and New York, as well as Europe and South American offices.
Now, I've got to tell you, those are very unusual call letters, and I thought you had to have either a K or a W.
Well, that's the truth in most cases. This is, of course, an international station, and the international call signs are more or less issued by the International Telecommunications Union.
So, have you been issued that call letter, NDXE?
It is a pending application with the FCC.
Okay, that's very interesting. Now, you're going to operate a commercial shortwave station. What is your target area?
Well, our target area is basically the whole world. Talked about the other governments around the country and their facilities. We plan to have 400 or 500 kilowatt units in place and operating about a year after our initial sign-on. We look for our initial sign-on to come around June of 1985 at the latest.
Now, you plan to have how many transmitters?
Four 500 kilowatt units in a modular concept, Ray, where we can actually kick up our service to any one target area up to 2 million watts carrier power.
Do you think that the FCC will give you the 500,000? No other radio station in the United States has 500,000 watts except the Voice of America.
Well, of course, we are one of very few internationally chartered radio stations under the Federal Communications Act. And basically, the only allotment in the law is you have to operate internationally with more than 50 kilowatts. If you can pay the power bill, you can go even past that point. But it does not make real good technical sense to do so.
All right. So you will be operating with in the future with 400,000 to 500,000 watt transmitters.
That's exactly right. And of course, you know, basically, shortwave power is measured in affected radiated power.
So you're going to have some exotic antennas, right?
Oh, some very exotic antennas. We hope the state of the art. We hope that we can really attract some attention by being a commercial enterprise. As you well know, the most important part of our service is a listener, and we have to service him very well. And we will also be in stereo.
Stereo, shortwave.
Yes, I have had many conversations with the engineering community, and basically when you can control the technological advances in the transmitter and have something to say about the receiver, they tell me that the reception you can transmit is just like you were in the concert hall.
Well, that's very interesting. Now, does it bother you that other stations in the past have tried to go commercial and have failed when it comes to shortwave?
No, I believe there's definitely a reason for it. Basically, you all, I'm so happy to be here tonight in the midst of this wonderful company, but you talked about the boat anchor receiver. I think the technological microchip has put the shortwave radio in the grasp of every human being's palm, and with the it's the only answer to mass communications around the world for the affection of a global image.
How do you plan on attracting sponsors? Because they want to see ratings and things like that.
Oh, sure. Well, we've got the answer to that. I'm going to hire the best advertising agency money can buy, and I'm in the process of talking to them, and they already have most of these sponsors ready to go on the air. That's their job, to assist us in getting sponsors. So we already have that pretty well figured out.
Is it going to be institutional-type sponsors? Are you going to do mail order? What are you going to do?
Basically, a little bit of both, but what we're looking for commercially is a blue-chip sponsor, like Buy the World a Coke. I've been hearing that worldwide Coke symbol, Teach the World to Sing in Harmony. I've been hearing that so much during the holiday season. People like Coca-Cola, people who have products on the shelves of grocery stores and outposts in all the countries of the world that need to have a standardized and globalized image across the world, and basically we're just seeing a need and actually fulfilling this need, and through an old medium, shortwave. It's just found a new handle.
What kind of programming are you going to have?
Basically, we're going to have a new type programming, and it all comes under the heading of being world class. When we say that, we mean taking the best of domestic programming and international programming, interspersing music programs in a block format where you hear them several times during the period of a week. The world is a very big place, and it's very hard to bring the world together under one tent at one time, so we plan to block these programs out and play the programs at certain times and make sure that the listening audience knows well in advance of what we're doing. And our basic thrust is to promote listening worldwide, regardless of what band it's on, regardless of how. But to promote radio listening, it's a good, clean habit and a good, clean hobby, and more needs to be said for it. It's certainly one of the best and least expensive and one of the better hobbies that I know of.
You know, I remember the man who used to be the chief engineer for the Voice of America, Jacobs, a couple of years ago, he suggested that maybe the time was ripe for commercial shortwave broadcasting.
Well, I've had the opportunity to talk to George Jacobs on many occasions, and I certainly respect his abilities as an engineer, and you have no prior consent problems that you have with a satellite. That means that you can, in international form, in the television medium, you have trouble transmitting into countries if they don't want your signal. If you have a book or a magazine or a Bible or something, there's certain political parameters known as borders that keep these things out. If it's a newspaper, it can't go into certain areas. shortwave knows no bounds. It has no no basic problems outside of jamming, and that's not much done on a free enterprise commercial type medium. And so what I'm trying to say is it's the only medium that has the capability of bringing all the people of the world together in a universalized global concept. It's the only answer to globalization.
Mr. Norman, I've got to tell you, I cheered when I heard that you were going to put on a commercial shortwave station. This makes the second one, but WRNO is literally running a duplicate of what they're doing on one of their domestic stations, right?
That's my understanding, but Mr. Costello is doing a good job. He has listeners all over the world with his station, and we look very forward to being a sister station of his. He plowed some pretty hard ground with the FCC to get his station on the air, and I believe he's doing a tremendous service to the people of the world.
Well, I salute both of you to think that we'll now have two commercial shortwave stations in this country, because I always felt that we weren't sending the proper image overseas. Either it was the Armed Forces Radio Service, or it was the Voice of America, the voice of the United States government, or it was the religious broadcasters, but the commercial broadcasters weren't there.
There's no question about it, and the point you make is an excellent point, and one that basically we saw a need for, and we were always taught that if you fill a need and commit a great public service at the same time, you're doing something worthwhile, and that's what we're trying to do.
Well, Mr. Norman, we're looking forward to it, and thanks for contributing to something that I think should have been, in process for a long, long time in this country, and that is a commercial shortwave station.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be on your show, Ray, and after I'd heard that you had been a listener for going on 40 years yourself, I was greatly impressed with that, and what you say to me makes a lot of sense, I greatly appreciate it, and we would like all the listeners on this program to write us and tell us what In-Dixie can do for the shortwave listening public and to increase listenership across the band. This could be the savior of AM radio also.
All right. How do they write to you?
Yes, they write to me simply at In-Dixie, N-D-X-E Radio, Box 569, Opelika, O-P-E-L-I-K-A, Alabama, and the zip is 36801. And they can, of course, write to me personally, H.D. Norman. I'd like to hear from each and every listener to advise me of how we should program this thing, the marketing ideas that they might have. We're totally open-minded, Ray, and we would like listener input.
I think that's sensational. Mr. Norman, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a great pleasure, and we look forward to having you on our station when we sign off.
Thank you very much. All right. How about that, Dr. Wood? Have you known too much about this operation? Dr. Richard Wood?
Yes, right. I have. I've corresponded with Mr. Norman, and I told him, frankly, that he had handicapped himself in the eyes of the experienced DX community by choosing that call. NDXE, as many of us think that he won't be assigned that. Of course, the N prefix belongs to the United States, but it has not been traditionally assigned to broadcasting stations, and it hasn't been assigned to international broadcasting stations either, those that we've talked about,
mm-hmm.
WIFR.
Well, even if it goes by another call letter in the end, what about the concept?
The concept is good. Some of us are a little concerned that it may not succeed as a commercial station in the mold of current AM radio, and it might gradually devote an increasing amount of its time to prepaid religious programming.
Well, that's all we need is another religious station. We have so many of them on the band,
right,
as you know.
We don't need another, because there's a great plethora on the band. So people out there listening who haven't tuned the shortwave band may not realize the very large numbers of religious broadcasters that are on the air, particularly those taking prepaid, pre-recorded.
Right, and one of the granddaddies of them all, of course, HCJB in Quito, Ecuador. Who?
Absolutely.
For a religious broadcaster, they do a beautiful job.
Right.
All right, we've got Joseph Costello on the phone. He's owner of WRNO, Worldwide Radio in New Orleans. Good morning, Mr. Costello.
Oh, just call me Joe Ray.
All right. How are things in New Orleans?
Oh, they're doing great. It's a very unseasonably 75-degree weather here for December, and it's really, really nice. I just called to put not my 2 cents in, but to really thank you for the publicity that you're giving international broadcasting. It is really something that is lacking on the medium wave bands here. And in talking with a friend of mine who was director of engineering at the Voice of America for many years, George Jacobs, for some reason there is a prohibition in the rules which prohibits a domestic shortwave service. And for many years, in the early days of radio, in the 30s and 40s, shortwave was included on many of the radios made here in the United States. And
I remember it well.
I don't know why it was exactly dropped, but I think that as we lost the consumer electronics market to Japan, the fact that we now see a importing of radios that do cover the three bands, long-wave, medium-wave, and short-wave, and of course, FM. But the main thing that I see happening in putting RNO, we're now going in our third year of on the air, on a worldwide service, the main thing I see happening is that people are beginning to be trained in the fact that there was a time when they didn't know what it was to switch a radio from AM to FM. And now with so many different radios coming in that pick up the audio of TV programs that secretaries bring to the office and listen to their soaps on and scanners and weather radios, people are learning that there's more to radio than just, you know, AM and FM. And the fact that they're now learning to band switch and that there is an importation of foreign manufacturers, Japanese in particular, on the shelves, that you can go virtually into any of the larger stores and you can see 25 to 40% of the portable radios on display are all international band radios.
Yeah, all multiband radios.
Exactly.
And they work so well with just the little pull-up antenna nowadays.
That is so very true. And I put an FM station on the air in New Orleans 17 years ago, and at a time when people said, "What's FM?" And people said, "Why did you put a short wave on the air?" I said, "Well, I've done this already." People are just saying, "What's short wave?"
Right.
And I'm doing the same thing on short wave that I did on FM 17 years ago. We're selling converters for cars.
How are you doing?
We do that with a mail order business.
No, I mean, how's the station doing? Is it
commercially or monetarily?
Well, commercially. Are you able to make the bottom line, as they say?
Do more than that. The station has made a very good profit for me since it went on the air.
Oh, I think that's great. Now, you're using 100,000 watts. What kind of an array do you have for an antenna?
We're using a log periodic antenna with a 14 dB gain and a 70-degree beam width.
Now, as I understand, you have to broadcast legally to Canada. Is that right?
That's correct. Because of this rule that says that prohibits a domestic shortwave radio, domestic shortwave service, rather, mm-hmm. we have to legally beam to Canada.
Well, now, when I took a trip in my plane during the summer of year before last,
mm-hmm.
I listened everywhere I went in the eastern part of North America, and WRNO is right in there solid. But, of course, as you know, you don't put in much of a signal on the west coast of North America.
No, we're rectifying that. As a matter of fact, TCI Antenna Products has already designed for us a dipole curtain, which has electrically been engineered to fit on the plot of land that we have, to beam to the west coast with a second 100 kilowatt transmitter. Construction for a permit for this will be applied for by the summer of next year.
There's some news that nobody has, I'll bet.
No, you're correct. We are very concerned about running two 100,000 watt transmitters that close together in close proximity.
Mm-hmm.
And we're more concerned from a technical end about intercoupling between the two antennas and the radiation pattern. And of course, it's done all the time where you have acres and acres of ground, but we're on 5 acres of ground. Right at the edge of New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
and we're kind of tight for space, you know, and we can't buy land around us to expand. So the design has been approved, and it'll work electrically with the main lobe of our beam covering from the Mexican border into Saskatchewan, into Canada,
mm-hmm.
and with a second transmitter, again, not with separate programming, though. I mean, we'll have the same programming
sure.
with the transmitters.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to just correct something that...
Okay, we have exactly 1 minute.
Okay, is that we are totally separate programming.
Oh, you do have separate programming.
Yes, starting last May, we totally separated our programming when the World's Fair started here in New Orleans, and we were broadcasting 86 hours a week live from the World's Fair. A lot of people from around the world were coming by and saying hello, and I will just conclude by saying that we are totally separate now. We do have about 15 hours of paid religion on the weekends, which helps pay the bills. But we carry NFL Saints football for the third year in a row. We're carrying collegiate football with LSU. We're now negotiating for LSU basketball to be broadcast on our service. And we've got all the sponsors. We carry ABC News twice an hour.
That's great. Joe, I appreciate your call, and good luck to you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Joe Costello of radio station WRNO, shortwave. Hey, did you hear that, Dr. Richard Wood?
Yes, I did. I wish I had a chance to ask Mr. Costello about the Iranian clandestine program that WRNO is carrying, a program directed against the current Iranian government. This is a totally new venture, I think, for a commercial.
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, it's called The Voice of Freedom, and it's operated by, I think it's Washington, D.C.-based Iranian opposition group, so it puts WRNO in the position of a clandestine station for a portion of its daily programming. I think that's on the air at midnight 30 UTC.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the news that he gave us there about a Western beam for WRNO, Stuart?
Well, I think it's going to make a lot of the folks out here happy because they've been trying to tune in, and the propagation-wise, it's, you know, it's just not possible because they're
all along the East Coast. Right. It just booms in wherever I was.
Well, they beamed to Europe and Canada.
Right,
so
right.
Lucky,
but
over there.
West of the Mississippi just didn't do that well.
No,
well, so
really.
That's going to be big news.
Right, right.
Dr. Wood, did you know about that before?
No, that is good news for me. As you may know, I write a column for a magazine called The Shortwave Guide, and I've just been eagerly noting those facts down.
It'll be in The Shortwave Guide, new issue.
That's right, it's going to be in there. I write a column called The Expert, and it's been put into a general feature called World Radio News, and that's going to be my lead item for USA under the North American section of the column this month.
Well, how about that? All right, on the phone from Hawaii, we've got Dr. Richard E. Wood in the studio with the American Shortwave Listeners Club celebrating its 25th anniversary, Stuart McKenzie. This is Talk Radio. I'm Ray Brain.